This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchin. Version 2 of this podcast, peel back the curtain real quick. We did this one already last night. Of course, we had some technical difficulties, which everybody that's ever done a podcast has experienced. So we're going to give it a go for round 2 here today. It's going to be better than round 1, I promise. But before we get into it, can you believe the NFL preseason is underway? We're almost to the NFL regular season at this point, Adam.
Yeah, we're getting close. You can really, we've already seen so many players at this point and so many players who won't play once the regular season starts. So just sort of itching to get to the real games.
Absolutely. To celebrate another season kickoff, BetOnline.ag and CLNS Media are giving you a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Head on over to BetOnline.ag or use your mobile device to join today and use promo code CLNS50 to receive your welcome bonus. Don't sit on the sideline this football season. Get into all the action with BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. A minimum deposit of $55 is required to qualify for the bonus. And the Patriots, over the last couple of days here on Sunday and on Monday, making a flurry of roster moves with veteran players. Obviously, yesterday on Sunday, they cut wide receiver Maurice Harris. They also cut outside linebacker defensive end Keontae Davis. And then today, they announced that they cut, or Mike Reese actually has it. They haven't announced it officially yet, that Mike Pennell, the defensive tackle who they brought over from the Jets in the offseason, is now going to be on the outside, and he was released also. So a flurry of kind of, you know, before the storm moves here for the Patriots, getting some veterans that they know are going to be off the 53 out of the way. Let's start with the wide receivers, though. This is what we really wanted to hit on. No Maurice Harris after, I think, you know, just a few weeks ago, Maurice Harris was running with the starters. He was ahead of Jacoby Myers. Jacoby Myers leapfrogs him. Josh Gordon and Demaryius Thomas and Julian Edelman come back at him. And now Maurice Harris is just not on the roster. It's pretty incredible fall from grace from here for Maurice Harris.
Yeah, and I think it speaks more to some of the depth that they have now than the type of player he is. I think he's still a good player. And he made some, you know, good plays in the preseason and everything like that. I think he'll find a landing spot. It's just that some other guys, like you said, played better. You know, some guys jumped into the picture. You know, if Gordon doesn't emerge or doesn't pop back into the picture, maybe he's still on the team. So I think it's just a numbers game. I don't necessarily think he's a bad player or anything. He obviously flashed at times at camp. So I think he'll land on his feet somewhere.
Yeah, I still like his game, and I really, it's funny, like I said, mini camp and then into the starting, like, first week or so of training camp, he's running with the starters, and he's also not just running with the starters, but kind of playing a focal role in the starting offense. You know, they're using him inside, outside, they're throwing him different types of passes on different routes, he's picking up the offense quickly, it seemed, and I think the story with Maurice Harris's whole career, which I think I feel bad for him about, is that he just can't stay healthy. You know, there's just little nagging injuries that keep on coming up for this guy, whether it was in Washington or here with the Patriots, here at New England. He gets a lower leg injury. I believe it's an ankle issue for him in a joint practice with the Titans, and he goes down and he can't practice for a little while, and then he gets cut with an injury designation, meaning that if he clears waivers, he might end up back here in New England on their injured reserve, and we might be doing this all over again with Maurice Harris this time next year. So he might not even be gone yet. I do want to, before we moved on to Mike Pennell, reset kind of the depth chart here for people. I think the five guys that I think we both feel pretty comfortable with saying are on the roster are Julian Edelman, N'Keal Harry, Philip Dorsett, Jacoby Myers, and of course, now I'm forgetting the last one, Josh Gordon, obviously. Right. So those five, I think we can say are on the team, pretty safely on the team. But then it kind of gets interesting with that sixth spot, even though, you know, you don't conventionally carry six wide receivers. I think it's very much in play for this team, given their tight end situation. So that is when we get into the Gunnar Olszewskis, the Braxton Berrioses, and of course, Demaryius Thomas. I wrote about this today and kind of said that I would assume that Thomas has kind of the inside track to that sixth spot. Is that how you see it as well?
Well, I can see that. I just don't know what Thomas is like right now, you know, like what he exactly brings to the table, because, you know, I haven't seen him up close yet, you know, this preseason. So who knows how good he actually is right now. But I think that I'd rather see Olszewski, I always screw up his name, and Berrios make the team just because of their return ability. So I would, you know, I don't know how good, you know, those guys are, you know, as, you know, NFL receivers against NFL, you know, starting caliber defensive backs right now. But I like their ability to add something in the return game and, you know, give the Patriots something on special teams.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of this, because with Thomas, and I know, you know, I put this out there on Twitter yesterday just saying that, you know, if he's not going to contribute in the kicking game and he's your fourth or your fifth wide receiver at best on the depth chart, then what is he really doing out there? You know, what is really his role on this team? Is it worth keeping him solely on the team as insurance to Josh Gordon and, you know, kind of insurance to N'Keal Harry maybe not panning out as a rookie? You know, that is really the only way that he is going to play significant snaps is if there's a bunch of injuries at that outside receiver position, or if one of those two guys isn't where they're supposed to be in their development, or in Gordon's case, just not on the field. So it's really, you know, he's an insurance policy more than anything. And is that worth keeping around over a guy like Berrios or Gunner, like you said, that are going to contribute as returners? I have a tough time keeping a sixth receiver that is going to stand on the sideline as much as Demaryius Thomas probably is at points this year. And I go back to last year with Philip Dorsett, where he was the number four behind Hogan, Gordon, and Edelman for about a 8 to 10 week stretch, and he played 9 snaps a game. They only went 4 wide receiver 18 times total all of last year. The league average is 17 total snaps for the entire season with 4 wide receivers on the field. So that if they go 4 wide receiver more than a couple of times a game, they are breaking a mold. Right. Like they're going completely outside the box. The Patriots have obviously done that before, but I think that, you know, to predict that at this point would be, you know, it'd be going out on a little bit of a limb. So I think that we're talking about a receiver in Demaryius Thomas who is really an insurance policy for a bunch of other guys that they have ahead of him. So I definitely see him as kind of having the inside track because of how the team has viewed him to this point. And yesterday he said, we talked to him yesterday and he said that, you know, some days and some plays, he feels like he has the juice. He feels like he has that burst that he know, you know, you can feel it as a player, right? Like if you have it or not, mm-hmm. He said some days he feels like he has it. Some individual plays, he feels like he has it. And then other plays, it feels like it's gone again, you know? And I think that that's, you know, the sign of kind of an old aging player a little bit. You know, and a guy that's coming off a serious Achilles injury and is 31 years old, going on 32, that those are kind of the signs of when it's not consistently always there and it's just kind of coming and going, that's usually the signs that the end is somewhat near. So I think that I would think that the Patriots view it as Demaryius Thomas has that sixth spot locked up right now or close to it. But I do think that from a roster construction standpoint, it's worth kind of debating whether or not he's even worth it over guys that have return ability. Let's talk about Mike Pennell, who I'm disappointed that this one didn't work out. When they made this signing, I really thought that this was kind of one of those under the radar. It reminded me a ton of when they signed Lawrence Guy and everybody else that really was like us, that it really gets into the weeds of the league and stuff like that. We're like, oh, this is a great under the radar signing. Yeah. And it obviously has not, you know, going to work out anything close to what Lawrence Guy has done for them over the last couple of years. You know, just kind of painting the picture. Danny Shelton obviously came into camp and really played his butt off and has played extremely well and kind of leapfrogged Mike Pennell. And I also think that there's just something just didn't click with Pennell that they were hoping would, and it just didn't go the way that they wanted it to.
Yeah, I still think he's a good you know, like nose guard or what, or defensive tackle, wherever you put him on the interior defensive line, I still think he can play. I was shocked that he didn't really take off. I thought he was going to be a real sort of upgrade at over sort of like a Malcolm Brown. You know, I thought he just seems like a big, powerful guy that can really push the interior line back. And so, but, you know, on the upside, I mean, Danny Shelton has really looked good, you know? So, I mean, it's one of those things like, yeah, you wish Pennell would have popped, but I mean, it's only to me because, you know, Shelton's really looked outstanding to me. So, you know, it's, you know, you wish, you know, he had worked out, but at the same time, you're not hurting at that position.
Yeah, and it was a combination of Shelton. Also, I think rookie Byron Cowart has taken them a little bit by surprise. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they thought that he was going to be as much of an impact player as quickly as he has been. And I think the other thing is, too, and I was talking to Shelton about this the other day, is that they're trying to, I think, at least in the preseason and coaching it up in training camp, for those guys in the interior to get a little bit more vertical, you know, get off the ball and get upfield a little bit quicker and not just hold at the point of attack. And if that's kind of, if they're going for more of like a penetrating nose tackle than a guy that's just going to hold the point and two gap and do that kind of stuff, then Shelton and Byron Cowart are kind of more their cup of tea right now than a guy like a Mike Pennell. So I think that the stylistically, maybe they changed up things slightly. And I also think that they really liked what they saw out of Cowart and Shelton. But I, like I said, I was really surprised that Pennell didn't stick and didn't kind of survive this cut down even to this point. So we're going to talk now about the game a little bit on Thursday, get into some of the things that we saw. We wanted to start with Brady, obviously. You know, our first look at Brady in 2019 here, age 42 looks about the same, I would say, as age 41 did.
Yeah. I mean, there's no drop off. Everybody's talking about these throws, but they really, you know, weren't mentioning again, like the sideline throw to Dorsett, and, you know, that sort of laser over the middle to Izzo, you know, these are, you know, the knock on Brady for so long has been his arm strength. You know, those aren't like weak arm throws, you know what I mean? No. So, like, to me, like, he's still fine. Like, I mean, still going to be able to play at a high level. I was impressed. I mean, I don't see any reason to doubt what he's about to do this year.
No, honestly, I thought that, you know, listen, I think last year what happened with him slightly when his play did dip a little bit in the middle of the season, if it did at all, was just the fact the war of attrition, just, you know, a long season, you're not going to be as fresh as you were at the beginning, right? And I think that was some element of it. I do think, you know, there was some injuries that were reported by guys like Mike Giardi and stuff like that to his knee and to his legs during that season. And that played a contributed to the fact that he wasn't, you know, driving the ball downfield as well as he has in the past. Then we come to the preseason here. And you mentioned those two throws. You know, the one to Izzo was an absolute bullet. You know, that's a seam throw that Brady makes in his sleep, and it's just absolute cannon. I think the one to Dorsett, though, was even a little bit more impressive to me because he had pressure in his face, because he had to drive the ball probably about 25, 26 yards in the air to get it all the way out there with a little bit of pressure in his face and a guy closing on him. And he wasn't really able to completely step into that throw. And he was still able to drive the ball all the way out there to Philip Dorsett. That's a throw that a lot of young quarterbacks, like, let's say our boy Brett Rippon. Brett Rippon does not make that throw, right? No. You know, and Brett Rippon's 23 years old. So it's not even just an age thing. It's just a matter of, you know, that's an NFL throw, you know, all the way out to the sideline like that, off your back foot with pressure in your face. the receiver's open, Dorsett's open, and you got to make that throw as an NFL quarterback. And obviously Brady is capable of doing that. Listen, I know everybody wants to, you know, get caught up in what he does with the deep ball and how far he can throw it and if he's accurate, you know, beyond 20, 25 yards in the air and all that kind of stuff. I don't think any of that really matters, to be honest with you. Like, if he's accurate from that 10 to 25, 30-yard range, that intermediate to extended intermediate range, that's where he lives. That's his wheelhouse. And that's all that really matters to me with Tom Brady. And he obviously passed that test on Thursday night against the Panthers. And I think that we're – listen, if the weapons around him kind of – do what they are expected to do with Gordon and Edelman and the running backs, and N'Keal Harry starts to take off maybe a little bit here, I think Brady's going to put up some good numbers. I really do.
Yeah.
And regardless, though, whether he's, you know, middle of the pack like he was last year statistically, none of that really matters either to you know, in the grand scheme of things. All right, let's talk about Sony Michel. Obviously, another guy that we got our first look at on Thursday night. I think everybody that watched him just by the eye test, he seemed a little bit more juiced up, a little bit more explosive than he did last year.
Yeah, he really popped. I mean, he was powerful. He finished his runs. It was pretty rare when he got taken down by the first guy. And he showed really good explosiveness, I thought. And that's kind of what we expected when he was coming out of Georgia, to have that little burst to him. To, you know, take a, you know, 5 to 10 yard gain and get it to 30, and you know, like we were saying, that was a bit of the difference between him and Harris, is, you know, Harris doesn't have that sort of like extra gear. He's, you know, love Harris, he's very good back, but you know, that's sort of the difference between the two. Michelle, you know, he's sort of more explosive, so. You know, I just like at this point where that whole room is, you know, they've got a lot of different, you know, types of backs, and, you know, they're all quality guys. So, you know, their running game and their, you know, ability to catch the ball out of the backfield, not necessarily with Sony so far, but in general is really well-rounded and quality stuff. It's good.
Yeah, that's like kind of the next element, obviously, is him catching balls out of the backfield. He's done it a little bit in training camp and in some of the joint practices, but I wouldn't say that he's been like a factor back as a receiver. You know, like he's not like an Alvin Kamara or Saquon.
Right.
He's more like catching passes in the flat and kind of being the check down guy and that kind of stuff, which I think is still valuable, obviously, to just have that threat that if they do pass with him on the field, you can't just not cover him. You know what I mean? Like, he's got to be somewhat of a – he's got to be a fifth receiver on the field. He's got to be a fifth eligible and just at least, you know, make some of those catches in the flat and keep defenses honest. So I think that that's good news with him. I think, like, what you said about Damien Harris, you know, I don't want to, like, act like we have to pit them against each other. But at the same time, when you watch, like, Damien Harris, the 20-yard run that Harris had where he almost scored 2 weeks ago against Tennessee, and then you watch the 30-yard run that got called back for – Sony, there was just like you said, there was just a different gear there for Sony, a different, like when Sony put his foot in the ground and got vertical on that 30-yard run, he really bursted into the secondary. Like there was like a noticeable kind of takeoff there. But Damien Harris, it was more of like a gradual kind of, you know, and he didn't even end up scoring. So it's not, I think that you're 100% right that Sony has a little bit more explosiveness as a back. And that 30-yard run, I know it got called back, but that was, I don't know if he had that kind of explosiveness in that first step like he had in that run. When he kind of found his way through the hole and really put his foot in the ground and took off there, he was into the secondary like an almost, you know, like a lightning bolt. He was really quick into that secondary. So I think that that's really good news for the Patriots. It seems like maybe he doesn't have any more home run speed than he had last year. Like, I don't know if he's going to take any runs 80 yards to the house anytime soon. But I think that he does have that ability, like you said, to create and make a 5-yard run into a 20-yard run or a 10-yard run into a 30-yard run or something along those lines. Let's talk about his teammate there, former Georgia Bulldog as well, and Isaiah Wynn. We obviously got to see Sony as a rookie. We didn't get to see Wynn as a rookie. We've now seen him a couple of times this season. And I think that both of us are in agreement that he's just, the arrow is pointing way up with this guy right now.
Absolutely. You know, I just don't worry about him as long as he's healthy, like we were saying. Yeah. Like, he's, you know, I just think that, you know, his technique is good. I think he does, you know, everything fine and well and all that stuff. And he's always sort of in the right spot. And, you know, it, like, the concerns about his size not being like a prototypical left tackle size, I haven't seen that being an issue at all. You know, he's blocking these guys well. You know, he's got good quick feet. He gets a good low base and anchors well and everything like that. So, you know, I'm totally satisfied with him. As long as he stays healthy, I'm not worried about Tom Brady's blind side right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that he is really checked every single box and then some since he got back on the field and started going at full tilt and doing all those sort of things even in practice. I mean, listen, I think what you said about his technique is just, it's flawless. It's really great to see for a guy that is that young to already be this technically refined. The way that he sets in pass protection, just the base and the strong and contact balance that he has. And he's always so balanced in his lateral movements. And he's just got this like low center of gravity that is really great to see. And I think that the one thing that was I wasn't expecting out of him was how strong his upper body is. He's got a big, thick build to him in his upper body and his hands and his arms and his ability to get underneath guys and really push guys off the ball or control them in pass protection. When he gets his hands on you in pass protection, he does not let go. Like, he is locked on to guys and he's not letting guys get anywhere. And I think that that's really something that I thought was a little bit surprising. I knew he had good hand strength, but I didn't realize that he was going to be able to move guys as well as he has. I mean, he has really kind of just been eye-popping, and I think it is really a plug-and-play situation with him as the starting left tackle. I don't think that they're going to have to really do anything different. It's a different kind of style, though, than a guy like Trent Brown, obviously, because of his size. You know, Isaiah Wynn is going to be a little bit more aggressive. He's going to use his hands a little bit more. He's not going to sit back and let guys come to him as much because he doesn't have that 6'9", 350-pound size like Trent Brown does. But Trent Brown, you're not going to run through him. No one's going to run through him. So he can kind of sit back a little bit more. Wynn has kind of been a little bit more aggressive in his sets. He also has to kick out. We were talking about this yesterday. He has to kick out twice, you know, instead of once because of his kind of, you know, the lack of length there. But I, you know, like I said, it, as long as he's hitting his landmarks and he's getting there on time, it really doesn't matter how many times he kicks out. Right. You know, and so far that he's passed those tests as well. This was all things that we saw at Georgia, like hitting your landmarks, having great balance and just great lateral movement and just an athletic kind of approach to the game and really great hand usage and technically sound football player. These are all things that made him a first round pick, and he's just kind of continuing those at the NFL level. We'll see how he looks, you know, against Pittsburgh in week one against like TJ Watt and Bud Dupree and some really good pass rushers. But like you said, I'm not concerned about this at all as long as he's out there. And he's really been very impressive. And I think even the coaching staff has just kind of marveled at after how kind of quickly he has picked everything up and been able to just seamlessly kind of step into that spot without any hiccups. Let's talk about Philip Dorsett, who I think on Thursday night just cemented his spot on this roster. I don't think that Philip Dorsett's going anywhere anymore.
Yeah, he looked really good. You know, that trust factor is really there with Brady. Every time he targeted him, he caught the ball. He, like, his route running is really, I think from when he started here to now, his route running's really improved, especially on, you know, on a lot of those shorter routes. You know, he's just consistent. He's got really nice rhythm with Brady. When it goes his direction, you just kind of feel like it's going to work, you know? So, you know, I've always liked his speed, and, you know, we talked about this too. I kind of feel like he's gotten like stronger too. Like he's either bulked up or something. He just feels like he's more stout. So I think he's really coming into his own. I think he probably will have his best season as a Patriot this year.
Yeah, maybe his best season as a pro, you know, in general. And I think that the big thing, like, maybe he has gotten a little bit thicker and a little bit bigger build, because a lot of the routes that he's running now are not deep routes where he's just running by people. These are timing routes. You know, these are precision routes where he's, you know, going out or stopping on a fade, or he's cutting inside in the middle and sitting down in a zone coverage type deal. And these are not routes, you know, where he's just using his speed, his 4-3 speed, to just run by people on a go ball or a deep post or even an over or something like that. I'm sure that those routes will still be kind of a part of his repertoire. You know, I'm sure that they'll still use him on some of those plays in the future. But I think the thing that we noticed on Thursday night was that these are all timing and precision routes with Brady right now. None of this is any of that type of stuff where he's just being an athlete. This is all route running and precision and timing and understanding and chemistry with the quarterback. And I talked to Dorsett about it after the game, and he pointed out the pass that we were talking about, the 18-yarder on the sideline. And he said that he doesn't even think that Brady saw him. He doesn't even think Brady knew he was open, but that Brady trusted that he was going to be in the right spot, and Brady threw it to a spot, and Dorsett was there. And you see that kind of trust. There was another play later on where he stopped down at the sticks that I thought, you know, showed a lot of trust, where Brady threw the ball before he came out of his break. And Dorsett just said that, you know, there's just little things where Brady just wants you to run the route with a little bit of, you know, certain special kind of break, or a certain sit down in a certain spot, or do something a little bit different that maybe, you know, another quarterback and Aaron Rodgers or Ben Roethlisberger wants to run one way and Brady wants to run the other way. And Dorsett has kind of figured out exactly what Brady wants, and he's been able to translate that onto the field. And it was just a different level of chemistry for him compared to the other guys that are out there. I mean, we're going to talk about Myers here in a second. You know, guys like that, it was just clear that Dorsett had a much better understanding of what Brady wanted than some of those other guys did. So I think that, you know, kind of confidence and chemistry, Dorsett said, you know, it's not quite on Julian Edelman's level, but it's kind of trending in a good direction. So I think that's where they're at. Myers, you know, I think the thing with Jacoby and, you know, it's tough because you don't want to like harp on a couple of plays, right? Like there was like two or three plays in particular, obviously the route where he stopped running and he had a drop, and you know, there was a couple of things here and there while Brady was out there that didn't go so well for Myers. But at the same time, I think that this is a rookie that is kind of making rookie mistakes, and that's a good thing almost in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. People have to remember he is a rookie, and you know, he did bounce back towards the end of the game and worked well with Stidham and stuff like that. And you can still see, you know, all the traits that people like about him. And, you know, like we were saying, he's just sort of a victim of his own success with all that, because he played so well early that, you know, people expect him to do that all the time now and forget that he, you know, was an undrafted rookie. Yeah. And so I think, you know, if people scale back their expectations a little bit and remember where he's come from and where he's gone and where he is, I still am excited about his potential. I think just people need to, you know, remember, you know, what exactly he is at this point, and that, you know, just to, you know, not get way too ahead of ourselves with him.
Yeah, I think we all kind of fell victim to his success and got a little bit ahead of ourselves in some respects. You know, others probably more than you know, some people got way ahead of themselves and some people might not as much. But I think we all did a little bit just watching him just roast all those DBs the first couple of weeks of training camp even, and also in the two preseason games. It was tough not to get excited about the guy, right? I mean, he was making plays left and right. I think the thing that you saw, though, with the route that he stopped running, like, that's such a coachable moment where you tell the guy one time, you know, don't do that again, and this is why, and, you know, that doesn't happen again. You know, it's not something that I think is going to have to, that it will be a repeat occurrence with him. I think the one thing, you know, Dante Stallworth talked about this, and playing with Brady, you're never out of the play. And a lot of times, like, a certain concepts are drawn up in certain ways, and receivers will see a type of coverage and they'll say, oh, there's no way the ball is coming to me in this coverage. The ball is going to go over here because that's what the play design is kind of telling us to do. But the thing is that Brady sees the whole field, and if the safety takes a bad angle, or if you have a step on your guy, or whatever the case may be, even if you aren't the first read in the progression, or you're not even part of the progression at all, he's still going to throw you the ball. Yeah. I think as a young receiver, that is something that is a little bit different than maybe some other quarterbacks. Like when Jacoby Myers was playing with Ryan Finley at NC State, Ryan Finley is throwing to the read. You know, he's staying within the structure, and he's throwing to the first read, or maybe the second read. Brady is seeing the full field, and he saw that Eric Reed kind of took a bad angle to the post and was seeing it, you know, a different way than Myers was, and he threw the ball where Myers should have been. It might have been actually a little bit of a throwaway once he realized that Myers wasn't where he was supposed to be. But regardless of the point is that with Tom Brady, you're never out of the play. And I think that that's something that Jacoby Myers learned right then and there, and it doesn't need to really be addressed again. So I think that's, you know, kind of good news. The one thing that he did say after the game that I think is going to be interesting for him moving forward is that he did mention that the speed of the Carolina secondary, the starting secondary of Carolina, was a different level than the guys that he was facing in Tennessee and in Detroit. He needs to up his game. He acknowledged that. He knows now that, you know, he's not in college anymore. These aren't guys that, you know, he's going to be able to just run by. He's going to have to kind of elevate his game to that next level and play a little bit faster and do all those kinds of things. So I think that that's going to be the next test for him is, can he play faster? Is there another gear? Is there more separation there? Out of college, and a lot of people, you know, have asked me, why did this guy go undrafted? I've asked myself that question. I'm sure you have too. I think the big thing was, could he create separation consistently at the top of the route? In college, it didn't show the way that it has so far with the Patriots. So it'd be interesting to see if, you know, now that he's going up against guys like Dante Jackson and these really good players, if that is going to kind of, that weakness in his game is going to kind of come out a little bit more than it was when he was going up against fourth and fifth string corners in Detroit and in Tennessee. So that's the only thing I think in terms of big picture that you got to look for with Myers. But I think I speak for both of us when I say neither one of us are jumping off the bandwagon or anything
Absolutely
like that.
Not.
Yeah,
absolutely
it's just one game. And I know we talked about this, keep on saying this, but Dante Jackson, we were very wrong about Dante Jackson.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I thought, like, I knew he was fast, but I thought, like, he was real, like, and obviously I saw a lot of him in college, but I thought he was just hot and cold as an actual cornerback. But, like, he's always been fast. I never thought that was an issue, but, like, I thought, like, as an actual cover corner, he would make a lot of mistakes and, you know, make a big play and then make a really dumb play. So, but he's really been awesome as a pro.
Yeah, there was, I think, last year watching All or Nothing. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but it's really, really great stuff for anybody out there that wants to watch it, kind of documenting the Panthers season last year. There were points in the middle of the season last year where that inconsistency was coming up. And a lot of the coaches behind the scenes were saying the interceptions that he had early in the season were kind of masking some of the mistakes that he was making. Because, you know, and that happens a lot, I think, with young corners, where they have these great interception numbers early on because they're getting targeted a lot and they're jumping routes and they're making plays on the ball. And everybody's like, oh, this guy, you know, it looks like a stud. And there are some inconsistencies there. But I think both of us were, like, really low on Dante Jackson, if
we
I remember
were.
Correctly.
Yeah, we were.
And we were definitely, we missed on that one. He's definitely a very good corner. Let's talk about the Patriots defense, who through three games has given up a little under 8 points a game and 166 yards and has 15 sacks and 21 quarterback hits and is just absolutely annihilating everybody in front of them right now.
Yeah, it's so fun to watch. And this is kind of the defense that, you know, Patriots fans were hoping for. You know, a lot of those years, you know, especially under Patricia, when they'd sort of sit back and, you know, give up a lot of third downs and, you know, hold teams to low point totals, but give up, you know, yards and, you know, a lot of time in possession. It just didn't look like a dominant defense, even though, you know, in some respects, you know, it did the job. But, you know, this defense, I mean, if it's going to be anything like this during the season, just look like how aggressive they are, you know, the amount of extra guys they bring from different spots, they have so many guys coming at the, you know, coming yeah. at the quarterback that, you know, it feels like they just trust the fact that their secondary is going to get the job done with, you know, one-on-one coverage in a lot of places and really just send people and just like create havoc. I mean, you watch these guys even through, you know, a bunch of these preseason games and you can't really see where these guys are going to come from. But you yeah. know guys are going to come, and sometimes they don't. And it's just a really fun defense to watch. You know, they are sending guys backwards, and they are, you know, just really aggressive. And you know, this is a three-and-out defense right now, and it's just really fun to watch.
Yeah, it was funny. After the game, Devin McCourty said, the only thing that we're not doing is creating turnovers. He's like, that's the one thing that we want to work on as a unit is create more turnovers. I only have one takeaway in the preseason so far. I was like, yeah, that's the one thing you're not doing. You guys right. have given up like one touchdown the entire preseason, but yeah, you haven't gotten enough turnovers. I think what you said about the pressure is really interesting, and it relates so much to the coverage, and also relates to what they're doing on first and second down, because I think that one element of pass rushing that I've just kind of learned about since talking to a lot of coaches and talking to Bill Belichick about it is that it's so situational. You know, it's so much about the score and the down and distance. When you're in this, kind of harkens back to the Eagles Super Bowl, which is kind of a microcosm of a lot of their problems defensively under Patricia. When you're in a lot of like third and fours, third and fives, third and threes, where the whole playbook is open and the offense can run it, they can pass it, they can pass it deep, they can pass it short, they can do whatever they want. And that, you know, unpredictability makes it really difficult to just pin your ears back and get after the quarterback, because you're thinking about a lot of different things. On Thursday night and hopefully going forward, they're playing really good first and second down defense, good run defense on early downs, and good pass defense. And what they're able to do is get teams into third and tens and get teams into third and eights. And when you get into that situation, that's when you can bring pressure. That's when you can get creative up front. That's when you see all those different fronts where they have one guy down with the hand in the dirt and everybody else is moving around in the playground defense and bringing blitzers from different angles and all that kind of stuff. All starts with getting them into situations where you can bring pressure by playing good early down defense. So I think that all kind of relates to it. I also think that what the good news is, too, is that they finally have realized that they can trust guys like Stephon Gilmore on an island one-on-one, like you said, and they don't need to put safeties deep. And they're walking those safeties up, and they're using those guys to put in a seventh or an eighth guy even at times in the box and use those guys as pass rush threats. Even if they don't blitz, just the threat of them kind of lurking in the box and near the line of scrimmage, of those creepers and the simulated pressures, all those types of things just make the defense, or the offense, excuse me, think about it. And the offensive line needs to react to who's coming after the snap, and it has that little bit of uncertainty. And the other, you know, and the thing is that, you know, for years, Belichick has put a post safety, especially 30 yards off the line of scrimmage. It helps obviously protect against some deep balls, and it helps defensive backs play with better leverage and all that kind of stuff where they can play off of a post safety. But now what they've done is they've used that, if they do play six back, they've used that sixth guy, that safety, to bracket the number one, or bracket a tight end, or double somebody, or do something schematically to take away a first read or something like that. And it's not just a guy that has really only one role where he's 30 yards and he's playing a post. You know what I mean? And that's all that he's doing. Now they're using that guy as a weapon more, which I think is making it harder for quarterbacks because they have to hold on to the ball for a little bit longer. So I think all of those elements are great. I wrote about the simulated pressures and kind of what they were doing up front on Thursday night over the weekend. So you can go and check out that in more detail. It just, what they've done is, you know, it's really kind of fun to watch, obviously. And Gerard Mayo and Steve Belichick, you got those guys dialing up blitzes and high-fiving each other on the sidelines when they work. And it's just, it's a lot more fun. It's a lot more imposing your will defensively than kind of just holding on and just trying to keep guys out of the end zone and doing that sort of thing. I'm sure that there'll be matchups, though, where they're just trying to keep people out of the end zone. And they go back to kind of playing a little bit softer and a little bit more bend, don't break. But I do think that they're going to be a more aggressive unit like what we saw down the stretch last year. I think that's carrying over into this year. I think it really starts with the secondary, though. Like, we talk a lot about these guys like Van Noy and some of these pass rushers. We're going to talk about Chase Winovich here, too. But I really think that the fact that they have five guys that can cover man-to-man really well is what's allowing them to do all these kinds of things.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, there's a lot of times when the defense, like I was saying earlier, was fine holding teams to fewer point totals, but it just didn't look like a dominating defense. Yeah. This passes the eye test, so, as they say, in terms of just like, they're just flying around. They're, you know, they're knocking people out. And, you know, it's fun to watch. It's going to be a really, really exciting season if they can play like this when the real games start.
Yeah, you never want to wish injury on any player or anything like that, and it stinks that Cam Newton did get hurt, but they knocked Cam Newton right out of that game.
Yeah.
You know, pressured him on five of his eight dropbacks, and he was just running for his life, and obviously took that wrong step, and you hope that Cam is okay. You never like to see a starting quarterback go down or any player go down in the preseason. Before we sign off here, Chase Winovich, obviously playing with the starters, mainly as a pass rusher. He played 11 snaps, mostly on second and long, third downs, those types of situations. But I thought it was great to see him get rewarded for the play that he's, you know, the tremendous. I mean, you could not play better than Chase Winovich did in the first two games of the preseason. That was about as dominant of a preseason performance as I've ever seen. So it's good to see him get rewarded. And also, just what did you think of how he did out there against the starters?
Yeah, and again, it's kind of like Myers. Like, if you expected him to play that well against the starters, that like that's a little unrealistic. But
yeah.
But again, the same thing that I like with him, you know, even though he didn't necessarily have any pressures or anything like that, is, you know, he's still like a full field player. Like everywhere. Wherever the play goes, he's there. You know, he's you know, he doesn't give up on a play, even if it's on the backside. He's he just really is such a terrific guy when it comes to, you know, following the ball or being in the right spot and making the tackle work, even if he's not, you know, necessarily getting to the quarterback. You know, and he's, you know, and I think he's an asset against the run, too. So I just really still love him as a player. And I think, you know, you can say that about a lot of guys in this rookie class.
Yeah, he didn't record any pressures. But what you said about making the tackle work is so true. When you watch every single rep that he had in that game, the left tackle, the right tackle, whoever he's going up against, they had problems. Like, they knew that they were in for it when they saw Winovich lining up across from him. He did bull rush the left tackle at one point right over, just knocked him right on his ass, which was great to see. And, you know, listen, I get caught up, a lot of people get caught up in the disruptions and the pressure stats, which are all great. But at some points in time, you kind of have to watch and just see how much effort the tackle is having to put in to block a guy. And Winovich was still making the guy put in a ton of effort. And this was his first taste of starting caliber tackles in a game situation, not just in practice. So obviously it was going to be kind of a learning curve and kind of going to take him a few games, I think, to kind of understand what it is that he's going to have to do to beat guys and really kind of, you know, redraw up his plan against guys that he's not going to just out-athlete. Not that he was doing that against the backup tackles either, but he was just on such a different level than those guys. That, you know, especially the guys down in Tennessee, like those guys like Tyler Mars and stuff like that, just had no chance. They had no chance against them. So to go up against some better competition and guys that are going to hold their own against them, it's good experience, obviously. But I just love, you know, the idea, even on paper, of a pass rushing kind of front where you have Winovich, Hightower, Van Noy, Michael Bennett, Adam Butler. Like, they have so many guys now that can really get after the passer. John Simon, too, Jamie Collins. Like, all these guys have athleticism. They have skill. They have pass rush ability. This is not, you know, the defense a few years ago where they really were just going to push the pocket and contain guys and do that sort of thing. Like, these guys have moves. They have repertoires. They have speed. They have a lot of team speed now in the front seven that they didn't have before. So all those things, I think, are just awesome and really fun to watch.
And here's the thing about making tackles work, you know. There is a very small sample size that game, right? But over the course of a four-quarter game, if you're making the tackle work that much in the first quarter, the second quarter, the third quarter, by the fourth quarter, that's going to pay off because, you know, it's hard to keep, you know, up that level of, you know, blocking when you're working that hard for an entire football game.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff, like, is cumulative. I didn't pronounce that right, but whatever. But it's cumulative. And so, by the fourth quarter, that's going to result in some real pressures, some sacks, that stuff. I mean, it really wears down a tackle if he has to, you know, work that hard against one guy, two guys, whatever.
Yeah, and I always kept on looking to see Winovich go back in the game in that second half. Because, like I said, he only played 11 snaps, and I really thought that, you know, they might try to get him some more reps, and they kept him on the sideline the whole second half. So I think that bodes really well just for the fact that the way that they're viewing him now is basically like a starter or, you know, at least a situational pass rusher and a rotational player. And I think that you're right that if he had played four quarters, you know, if he had played the whole game against even the starters, eventually the speed and just the way that he was getting after those tackles was going to start to pay dividends. And I think that, you know, in a short sample, it's often difficult to get pressure one-on-one against an NFL starting caliber tackle, you know, and it's different when you're doing it, like you said, for 40 snaps a game or even 30 snaps a game. All right, we're coming to the end here. Do you have anything that you want to tease?
Well, I teased some stuff last night that I put out today. We're coming on the opening games for both BC and UMass. UMass's first-year head coach, Walt Bell, is at Rutgers on the Big Ten Network on Friday, 7:15, I believe. And they're only a 10-point underdog. I know Rutgers isn't very good, but UMass has been, you know, really struggling in recent years. So it'll be exciting to see if they can sort of hang there or even pull off the win, which would be, you know, a real jumping-off point for him and the rest of the program in general. And then BC is like, I think, a 3-point underdog to Virginia Tech at home, which is kind of curious to me because I don't think Virginia Tech's all that great this year. And BC beat them last year in Blacksburg. So I don't know. Maybe it's just sort of a lack of respect card, which they'll be able to use. And, you know, BC's obviously got the running back in A.J. Dillon, who's, you know, everybody loves and, you know, is going to be on everybody's board as a NFL draft prospect. And people have been on him for years. So so long as he stays healthy and, you know, and they just really reloaded on the offensive line. Some really good players there. So it'll be fun. Those games will be fun. The high school season's rounding into form. It's going to start not this week, but the week after that. There's a lot of scrimmages. And I'm doing my 40-team MIA countdown, and that's still going. We're down to 15 today, and so it's been pretty fun.
Is Vrabel's kid starting at BC this year?
Yeah, he's starting at left tackle.
There you go.
As a redshirt freshman, and it's funny. Like, I saw him in the spring. He was starting at right tackle, and then every time I see him, it's almost like every time I see him, he's bigger. You know, like, you can see that he's really committed to that, you know, Division I strength and conditioning program. And, you know, they get him big at BC, and he looks the part, man.
Yeah, Vrabel, I talked about it a little bit when we were down in Nashville. He's pretty obviously excited as a father now to be cheering on his kid. It sounds like his kid, as long as everything goes to plan, might be playing in the NFL someday.
Well, yeah, they're so excited about him. Like, when I went down there in the spring, he was one of the first guys they mentioned about the sort of the guys that were replacing other guys on the offensive line. They think the world of him. And obviously to have a redshirt freshman starting at left tackle at a place like BC, which always has a good offensive line, you know, that's great. I mean, he's tall, he's got a good build, and he's got good feet, and he's athletic. Like, I think he can absolutely play in the NFL. He's going to be a good player for sure.
Yeah. Over at clnsmedia.com, we have full coverage, obviously, of last Thursday and this Thursday coming up against the Giants. I wrote about the defense over the weekend and about some of the pressures and just a film review of what they did up front to get after the quarterback and get after Cam Newton. I wrote today about the wide receivers. Here in a few hours, recording this on Monday, we're going to talk to all the assistant coaches for the first time during the season. So talk to hopefully Dante Scarnecchia probably for a long time, and then maybe to Gerard Mayo and some of the other guys as well. So all that will be really fun. I'll have some sort of reaction up from the assistant coaches up as well. And then we have full coverage, obviously, of Giants week, as Belichick put it, here today on Thursday. We'll be at the game and we'll do videos, me, Sierra Goodwill, Alex Barth, Trags, videos, written reaction on Twitter, all, you know, balls to the wall, everything going on there.
Nice.
So I think that Belichick today, I don't know if you heard, but he hadn't heard that Andrew Luck retired from football. We didn't mention that. We were going to mention that briefly. He claimed he didn't know.
That's crazy. On Monday morning.
He, of course, knew. He just loves to play games with us. Give me 30 seconds of Andrew Luck before we really sign off here.
Yeah, you know, it's tough. You know, you're sad for him, but also happy for the fact that he can make such a really tough decision and for his health, both physical, mental, emotional. But it also really tells, you know, if you don't have an offensive line, you can, I mean, it just means so much. I mean, Luck was not like a slender dude. Like, he was like a big guy who was a good athlete, like could really move around. Like, but if you don't have that line, man, you know, you don't want your quarterback getting smacked around like that. And he just took too much. He just took too much damage. And, you know, and like I said, like, it's not like he's a statue back there. Like, he can move around. He moves well in the pocket. He's a good athlete and he's big. So it just goes to show, you know, like, if you don't have the offensive line, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I think what you said about it being a good thing in some elements, and not to go all millennial on you, but the toxic masculinity in sports of, like, that you have to play through injury and to show your toughness and to show your manhood and all these kinds of things. And Andrew Luck, I think it's a great thing that both him and also similarly Gronk as well realized that physically and mentally they were just drained from all the rehab. You know, they're drained from going through this entire process over and over again, and their bodies weren't responding the way that they wanted them to, and they hung it up. And I think that that's a good thing that we, as you know, as society and as football world too, are allowing players to do that now, where they're not forced, you know, to keep playing. And the Colts didn't take any money away from Andrew Luck because of this decision, which I thought was great too. I think that also, you know, just from another angle of it though, it is just sad that a player at 29 who back in 2012 when he was drafted was basically a consensus generational talent. And then when he got on the field, I thought personally on the field he lived up to it. Like, I think that he was that. I think he was everything that he was advertised to be. And yeah, they didn't win, and yeah, maybe they you know came up short in a few big games in the playoffs, so certainly in the game here in the AFC championship game. But I think that just watching him and watching him play eye test wise and even statistically, he was living up to every ounce of the hype that was put on him coming into his career. So to see that kind of cut from underneath him so early and so quickly is really too bad. And one other quick point, I do think it kind of puts into perspective how crazy it is what Tom Brady is doing. You know, just,
oh my God, yeah.
The fact that he has gone on like this for 20 years, physically, emotionally, mentally, all elements of it, it is just kind of, it's just puts it into another kind of point of perspective of how ridiculous it is that he's still out here doing this. Yeah. And, you know, even guys like Andrew Luck, like you said, that are big and strong and athletic dudes weren't able to do it. And Brady is still, you know, chugging along here. So it's pretty great. All right. Schedule wise, the Patriots obviously have to get down to 53 players on August 31st. I believe it's 4 o'clock on August 31st. Everybody needs to be down to 53. So there'll be a ton of, you know, roster movement here coming in the next couple of days, trades and cuts and releases and all sorts of different things. Surprise veterans, I'm sure, being released as well. So Adam and I will be back next week, early next week at some point, to break down who makes the 53, who doesn't, any trades that the Patriots make, any waiver claims, you know, the whole nine yards. We'll probably go over some things from the fourth preseason game too, just because we're maniacal, but we'll probably mainly focus on who makes the team and who doesn't in the 53 and all that kind of stuff. But until next time, signing off for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.